We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
An equal partnership, there would have to be a parity of esteem, and we'd have to work in partnership together.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but...
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular. Okay.
Hello, I'm Maggie Doyle and you're very welcome to the Your Politics podcast with Micheál Lehane and Sandra Hurley from our political staff. And also joining us this week in the politician's chair, our first independent TD of the season actually, and it's Waterford's Matt Shanahan. Matt, we'll be speaking to you in just a few minutes. I'm first of all going to talk to Micheál because obviously a lot happening, Micheál. It's a case of we're sort of waiting to see what's going to happen in terms of a potential Dublin lockdown that seems more likely now than even potential. But NPHET are meeting today and we're waiting to hear them what happens from that meeting.
Yeah, so it seems fairly clear now that the level of restrictions will tighten in Dublin, moving from level two up to level three, but it's not quite as simple as that. It probably will be level three with slight variations compared to what's in the plan. And what seems clear already is one of the major ones will centre around third level colleges and places of further education, that they will be an emphasis and a move to try and get them to put as many courses as possible online. So all those institutions in Dublin who have been planning, I think, fairly actively up until this morning, trying to get places kitted out so that the 1 meter distancing rule would apply. Suddenly, I think the brakes will probably have to go on that. So I think you can see the fact that you're having variations on the number three level probably rules out the possibility and some speculation that Dublin could go all the way up to level four, which would be more strict again. The other thing that clarity would probably need to be provided on in the next 24 hours or so is because it's at that point after the cabinet meeting tomorrow, Friday, that you'd get the final announcement and decision centres on restaurants and pubs that serve food. Initially, when that plan was published on Tuesday, it seemed that restaurants would be confined to just outdoor dining and serving takeaway. There is some changes to that now, but the exact detail hasn't been spelled out yet. But it seems like you could be returning to a requirement for 2 metres of distance within restaurants and gastropubs or pubs that serve food. The Restaurants Association would say something like that would probably close a lot of restaurants anyway, or reduce them to takeaway. When it comes to visiting homes, it seems like just two households can only visit one other household up to a maximum of six people. That looks like that will remain. But of course, one of the things that's different about level two and level three is that advice which is there now about not leaving Dublin, which is fairly strong government advice, strong eventually, when it did come, that will be underpinned by regulation, it would seem, after this. So it becomes even more strict again. And one other date that's kind of interesting is that those regulations which have been signed now to underpin the different levels, done so in the last 12 hours or so, they run until October 5th. That may or may not be, because they can always be extended anyway, but it may be illustrative of the thinking of the period that's involved around the tightening of regulations. And while there's a widespread expectation that Dublin will go first and Dublin will take that step alone, not confirmed, but that's the sense that other counties could be following perhaps in the not too distant future.
So NPHET meeting today, NPHET will then send their recommendations to the government. The cabinet subcommittee will meet tomorrow.
Before that, there's another step, that new cabinet, the new COVID oversight committee, like headed by the Secretary General to the government and senior civil servants, kind of weighing up the medical advice. What comes from NPHET is medical advice alone, weighing up wider societal impact and wider economic impacts before it goes to the cabinet subcommittee. Some people say that's a fairly unwieldy process. There's a lot of steps involved before you get to your decision, probably late tomorrow evening. And of course, criticism of the government that NPHET last week got a letter into them on Friday and that there wasn't action until Tuesday, and that the wording on that letter was strong, talking about narrowing windows of opportunities to deal with what was happening in Dublin. But it looks like it will still take until tomorrow. That's the process that's going to be followed. And I suppose...
And this will be the first time, Micheál, sorry, that other layer then of civil servants, the oversight, will be in use, will be used.
And the first time really that you've seen NPHET work to this 5-point plan, really calling for a tightening of a restriction. Mm. And it's interesting, I suppose, there is that question that arises out of the five levels which were devised by experts and politicians. And, you know, some reluctance on the government and some uneasiness about the criticism of it, saying that people who are criticising it really don't have public health interests in mind. Mm. But I suppose you would have to ask one question about it, and that is the fact that you've had five sections with strict criteria, and yet there has to be a bit of a mix and match approach, it seems. I suppose
there will, Dublin at the moment on a kind of a two and a bit.
Two and a bit.
And now it looks as though it'll be three and a bit.
Three and with some nuances is the key word. That will lead in some quarters to a political judgment and a harsh political judgment. But I suppose ultimately the test on it will be its success from a public health perspective. And that will be the measure of it in the end.
So we'll find out tomorrow, I suppose, really, once we get the government briefing time and date into us. But, well, we know it'll be tomorrow, presumably around tomorrow evening.
And midnight, you would think that the news would kick in.
So just ahead of a sunny weekend with maybe lots of Dubs heading out of the county for a little bit of a staycation to maybe somewhere like Waterford, which is where independent TD Matt Shanahan is from. Matt, just about the most recent data now that we've had from the Health Protection Surveillance Centre, the 14-day incidence, which is the issue that a lot of the medics have had, and NPHET indeed. So of COVID-19 per 100,000 people in Dublin is at 104. But as you go down the list then, Waterford, 64.6. So they're actually fourth down on that list. Is that a concern for you and what might happen in your own county?
Of course, it's a concern, Maggie, and I suppose a reference figure that was being used a couple of weeks ago in terms of transmission figures was about 25 per 100,000. You know, the 14-day incidence of 25 per 100,000 was seen as a kind of an issue for whether wet pubs could open. Mm. So, of course, it's an issue for Waterford. I think, though, it may need to be put in the context of it's a breakout in a particular manufacturing facility, and therefore we would hope that, you know, the protocols that are there are going to contain it, and we'd expect that there'd be pretty robust surveillance.
But of course, you mentioned the wet pubs, because it's on Monday that the wet pubs are due to, the wet pubs, I actually despise the term, pubs. Pubs that don't serve food are going to be opening on Monday. Mm-hmm. So would you think that that should still go ahead?
Absolutely. I think the wet pubs should have been probably open before now, to be honest with you. I think that we won't be able to quantify the damage that was possibly done by not having them open. I think we've a lot of responsible publicans. They want to get back. Community transmission is the issue and has been the issue for a number of weeks now with COVID, and we've seen that with the economy opening up. We need to figure that part out, but I think that wet pubs have a part to play actually in maybe venting, you know, some of the frustration where people want to meet up, and that they can do it in a controlled environment. And I think certainly from the rural point of view, there's a rural health and a mental health aspect to all of this and a community aspect to all of this. And that's what I would be advocating for. So I don't have personal concerns about the wet pubs, to be honest, as long as they are properly marshalled. And I think from publicans that I've met, they will be looking at each other's premises. And I think, you know, someone who steps out of line, it's very likely it'll be the vintners and their own associated groupings.
Shopping each other.
Yeah, well, I'd say that's the way it is, because they've been waiting a very long time to get back in business. I don't think anybody wants to risk this, you know, and I would say they're in it together now, and I think that's the way it'll be marshalled.
You're also a member of the COVID committee, the special COVID committee, which has been sitting now for a few months. Mm-hmm. What's your feeling about what you've gotten out of the committee, the answers that you've had? Because you've had a lot of different representatives from the departments, from the minister, from HSC, from various different bodies appear at the committee.
Well, I'm on record, I think, on the first day that the COVID committee was being described, that I wanted to see a committee that was going to be forward-looking. And I know that we've had lots of issues in how COVID was handled, and we can go into the testing and the nursing homes and all of that. But what I wanted to see was proactive measures being introduced to make sure that we were, as we went forward, you know, that we were taking account of where this disease could go in terms of both the economic and social and community health of the nation. And I think we have done some good work in that. I was the one who called for an interim statement there on the economy for the SMEs, and that was very timely because it came in advance of the July stimulus. And we did get some, I think we got some things through that were discussed at COVID committee, and beyond that we have had the look back at nursing homes. We're looking at the sports integration tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So I think it is acting when there isn't any other committee in place. It is acting obviously as a platform where these issues can be discussed.
Yeah, yesterday you were talking about the reforms that are needed in community care, and Dr. McLennan from the Department of Health, spoke about a standard assessment tool. Mm-hmm. that she said would be rolled out by the end of the year. And I just wondered when I heard that, I thought to myself, now, is that something then that frustrates you when you hear an answer like that? That, well, you know, when we're looking ahead at the winter plan and how the HSE is going to cope.
It's a little bit like government speak, and I think we need to understand too that resources are I suppose, I don't want to say they're restricted, but we probably don't have enough in the places and at the times that we need them. Just in terms of the subcommittee that's been proposed and that now Martin Fraser is taking over, I would welcome that. I think that the NPHET advice, albeit it's public health advice, and obviously, you know, we've very high level people looking at it, but I think it has been slightly divorced maybe from, you know, other issues in terms of the economy, as I say, and we need to balance these things out. We're heading for a budget deficit this year of probably close to, maybe could hit as high as 28, 29 billion, you know, and we need to keep that in mind. At the end of the day, I mean, and I think the Taoiseach alluded to this probably prematurely, but, you know, the science would tell us that there will be a vaccine within the next year. We have to get out of this. But when we do, we need to have some kind of an economy left that we can build from. So there is a balancing act there.
I suppose I'd love to know your own personal thoughts about how you found the change from local government, because you were a new councillor only in 2019 in Waterford and a new TD now this year in 2020. And then you're there in the midst of a COVID committee and in the midst of a pandemic. What has that? What has your journey been like from councillor to TD and dealing with national politics?
Well, I don't want to say, and I know this sounds probably trite, you know, I probably was a reluctant politician. Okay, I came, I've worked all my life in the private sector. I've never worked in the public sector. I was co-opted onto Waterford Council, which I took because of the cardiac issue, and I thought it would be a platform for that.
The cardiac issue, of course, being the cath lab that you've
absolutely
been looking for in Waterford for some time.
We're still waiting for the €6 million build of a second lab that's now taken, it's going to take 36 months to deliver. So, you know, there is frustration, absolutely, around all of that. So that's the platform that I'm on, and that's where I'm driving on. So you arrive into Dáil Éireann, and obviously, you know, your remit is not just that. There's other things that I want to see delivered for Waterford in the southeast. I think we have been poorly served in recent years, and I think government has ignored the region, to be quite frank, over the past 10 years. So that's why I'm here. I know why I'm here, but look, politics is a different game in terms of, you know, what you can do as an independent, maybe. But I think I'm getting some good things done. I'm getting movement. We're getting issues. You know, we're certainly getting them vented, and people are learning about them. And look, I'm here today talking to yourselves. So, you know, some national platforms have been created.
But you've got a great, like, when you look at the TDs covering Waterford constituency, you know, you've got, it's a fairly strong lineup you've got, because you've got a junior minister in health in Mary Butler.
Right.
You've got the main opposition spokesperson for health in David Cullinan from
right.
Sinn Féin. And you've also got a government TD in the Green Party's Mark
and the Green Party whip as well.
And
yeah,
yourself. Yeah. So it's all about health for Waterford.
Well, it is. And I think and we've Senator Cummins there as well. So I think, look, we have strong Oireachtas members there who are, and we are largely aligned on the issues of Waterford in the southeast. And they're not just Waterford, they are southeast regional issues, because if the region improves, we'll all improve. You know, the rising tide will lift all boats. So I think everybody's concentrated on that. And my concentration, to be quite frank, on this present time is to get, you know, these short hurdles over. We need to get our second cat lab operational. I was the one who called actually for funding to be put into University Hospital Waterford to open the Dunmore wing so that we could have isolation rooms. I asked for that in February, and lo and behold, we had doctors coming out in the media last week saying it was a critical step so far in having such a reduced rate of disease in Waterford. So I think we are getting good things done, and we just need to keep at it.
During the formation of government, where it looked like Matt, you could be kind of a central player, part of a group that would have wielded a lot of power. Two questions on that. One, was it disappointing that that just seemed to fizzle out so absolutely and categorically in the end? And the other was, is there any pathways that were created during those talks that tacitly or privately that are still in existence?
Well, I think, look, firstly, obviously, I would have said to people at the start, before the election was held, you know, there was a good bet that independents might have figured in terms of where polling was going. And I said, I'm probably as good a bet as anybody else maybe to be in some kind of a position of influence. Whether you describe that has happened or not, I think that book has yet to be written, okay? In terms of getting access, yeah, I have had access to the Taoiseach's office and to senior minister's office, and that has allowed me to get things done. And absolutely, at this moment in time, you know, I think I'm getting as much access as probably any governmental backbencher is getting. We'll see where the politics falls over the next while. Nobody can predict the future.
It could be needed, yeah.
And that might well happen. And, you know, I think that, as I said at the very start of my tenure here, you know, I want to support progressive government and policy. And I've stated that if the opportunity comes, we'll do that.
And you're part of the regional independent group of TDs. There's three very different groups of independents. You're in the regional group. What attracted you to them? How does it work? Just for people listening who mightn't really quite understand, because you're all independents and yet you do work as a group together.
So I suppose, look, the first thing is you need to be in a technical group. So for people who haven't been in Dáil Éireann, and if you don't have a technical group, I think the minimum number is 5. You get no speaking rights, okay? So you can't get to speak on any issues. So that forces you to try and find people that you can bind with, okay? Then you've got to look at where your political philosophies lie. And I suppose within the regional group, we are, to a large degree, I'd say very aligned. We are all rural independent TDs. I think we're all very well aware of the issues of rural Ireland, and they're largely the same, you know, across the country. So that gave us a natural foundation. And then I think we're also people who are all largely proactive. And if you look across people that are there, there have been people, a lot of them who've operated at high levels in different organisations. And I think we all bring different, similar skills, not quite the same. And we're getting on so far, you know. That's not to say we'll keep getting on into the future, but, you know.
But we haven't had any leaks or anything from any of meetings as such.
No, I think we start with the area of respect, and we start that way, and we try to, when we disagree, we try not to, you know, obviously have a fisticuffs. But, you know, who knows? We might end up there at some point down the road.
Two more brief questions for you. One is that your background is in marketing, and there's been a lot of sort of attacks on the government about their messaging in the last week, particularly, I suppose, and just in the last few days since they came out with their plan for living with COVID. If you were, and you said you've got the ear of the Taoiseach and the Donaitre, maybe, I mean, if you were to give some advice from a marketing point of view, would you give different advice as to how they are getting the message out about all sorts of aspects of living with COVID?
I think the very first principle of marketing is the KISS principle, you know, keep it simple, stupid, you know. And I think we need these really linear messages, you know, describing where we are. I think the issue we spoke before we came on air about masks, and I was probably one of the first TDs to bring it on the Dáil record. We put out a press statement asking for masks, and actually I felt that masks should have been mandated months ago. Now, I know there are other issues where government would have felt this was going to cause competition for PPE, and that was the understanding. But I think we should have been, you know, far more concise in the message. And even now today, as I said to you, I've seen slippage all around the streets of Dublin, and what's going on. I think we need to go back to
when you
know,
say slippage,
understand.
Do you mean physical slippage of the masks and the face?
And in the standards that people
because I'm
are,
seeing
you know,
a lot of that.
Well, I'm seeing people walking around with masks around their neck and under their noses and all of that, and that obviously defeats the purpose. But I think people need to understand this is an airborne pathogen. It's transmitted at close quarters, you know, through the air, through droplet spread. And, you know, with the winter months coming in, we know if you study the historical flu trends, we know that it's going to rise, and therefore we should be doing all. So just simple messages. I think government needs to get back to just the simple stuff. Isolate, you know, isolation is important for the older people, and unfortunately we don't want to do that, but you know, that's the safest way if the disease is on the rise. And then social distancing, cough etiquette, masks will do an awful lot to try and keep this disease tempered down.
Finally, Matt Shanahan, you seem to be enjoying being a TD, are you?
Somebody asked me that earlier on today, and I was in the House this morning, and I got two questions with the Minister for Community, Rural Development and Community. And look, you do, when you think that you've got a response that you can build on, yes, absolutely, you feel you're getting somewhere. I wouldn't be here and I wouldn't stay here if I didn't think I was getting something done. I feel I am, and as long as that continues, I'll hang on.
Well, thanks so much for coming in to talk to us.
Mate.
Really appreciate it. Independent TD from Waterford, Matt Shanahan. We'll let you leave the studio now.
Thank you very much,
we'll bring in Sandra Hurley from our political staff. Other items, I suppose, to discuss, Micheál. Fianna Fáil, another interesting week, I suppose, for Fianna Fáil, really. Jim O'Callaghan was on the radio this morning with our colleague Claire Byrne saying now is not the time for leadership challenge. However, his party colleague Eamon O'Queeve saying just the other day it's time for leadership change, and then reported leaks from the parliamentary party meeting last night. So what's happening?
Well, I suppose it's the opinion poll really that is triggering such alarm within Fianna Fáil. Equally, I think there's a realisation among most within the party that perhaps if they did seek to do anything. I think the appetite for any kind of move against Micheál Martin is fairly at a very low level anyway. Eamon O'Keefe said what he said. Does that mark the beginning of something? Yeah, perhaps it does. I think the most likely point of changeover will always be, though, at that point when Micheál Martin's term in December 2022 finishes as Taoiseach. That would seem to be the logical point. Anything before that, perhaps unlikely. Equally, within politics always, to invoke the great writer Dermot Healy's book, these are sudden times, sudden things can happen. Mm. And there are two more opinion polls.
10%, wasn't it, on Sunday?
Yeah, and there's two more due in October. Mm. And if they're following a similar pattern, anxiety would rise. And while you did get a fair degree of support for Micheál Martin last night, I suppose it was notable that none really of the prominent ministers were in that parliamentary party were contributing as vociferously in their support. But I think it probably is overplaying it to say that anyone is talking about a heave or that there are talks on that front. And people, of course, within Fianna Fáil and have been doing for months, even longer, will look to Jim O'Callaghan on that. And he has, as he said to you here some weeks back as well, he certainly doesn't appear to be plotting.
He doesn't appear to be plotting, Sandra. And yet he said it again, like that if he was asked at some point in the future, he would... Like, you know, he wouldn't mind the job. Like, so is that good, do you think, for Micheál Martin to be hearing? Is it good for the strength of the party?
Yeah, I don't think it's anything that Micheál Martin wouldn't have sort of surmised already himself. You know, when Jim O'Callaghan put out that statement when he turned down the junior ministry, he talked about the identity of the party and it was definitely heading in a certain direction. Micheál there was mentioning the parliamentary party meeting last night. There seems to be a lot of recriminations around that. I met a senior Fianna Fáiler this morning, somebody who has publicly being critical of the leadership, and the way they put it was that the newbies was the term they used, the newbies had been rounded up to give positive support. Now I'm sure those people cited they would reject that. I saw Lisa Chambers on Twitter was saying that the contributions were genuine, but certainly there's something stirring in the party. Eamon O'Keefe sort of publicly putting the leadership on the table. I would agree with Micheál, the appetite isn't quite there yet, but that opinion poll finding is very worrying for them. The Taoiseach was asked about it on the week in politics. He said, you know, he didn't look at polls, but they had been hovering on the mid-teens, and that's a really bad position. But to drop, to go in the negative direction by a large amount outside the margin of error, that is really, really worrying for them.
Yeah, I think from Fianna Fáil's point of view too, kind of looking around the country, some people will say the biggest problem probably is the lack of younger voters that seem to be aligned with the party. And some would compare it with where the Catholic Church was in Ireland at a certain point, that it's not any one thing anymore. It just goes back a lot of years and suddenly you're seeing a diminished base. The only thing that counteracts that to some extent is the fairly strong, decent councillor base, which wasn't too bad in Dublin either. That being there is an anchor, and it's something that you couldn't dismiss out of hand
and
either.
And some young councillors as well. You know, there's a good mix of age, there demographic, there and are, the
yeah.
councillors.
Yeah.
It was interesting when Jim O'Callaghan was in here actually a few weeks ago, and he was talking about going out and trying to, you know, drum up that support. But of course, we are in a pandemic. Chances of that sort of politicking is really limited, isn't it? And it certainly will be probably up until next year. I mean, we're all getting used to Zooms and webinars and all the rest of it, but it's different, isn't it? That sort of face-to-face meeting that you can have out in different constituencies and different small kind of council chambers, you can't have that.
Yeah, and I suppose you see, Micheál Martin can look at this and Dara Cleary too when he was there, and they did, and Dara Cleary particularly, drive up and down the country and went to every event locally to connect with the party. And that did yield good local election results. But when it came to the general election, there obviously was a massive problem. And it's, can that change the next time? And what's the best way of ensuring that happens? And if you did see any push, if you saw a whole series of bad poll results, would there be enough to move Micheál Martin as Taoiseach, and what impact would such a move have in the stability of the government? Always a fear that Fine Gael could gain an appetite to try and go again, given where they are in the opinion polls. All those type of things would suggest that it could be 2022 before anything happens in relation to this. And Fianna Fáil's problems look to be at this point back to our old friend, they're of a structural variety rather than the leadership. I think some people within the party know that. Equally, there are some people within the party looking at those polls who say, my best chance right now is to stick in there if I'm going to serve as a minister at any level rather than doing anything else.
I suppose, actually, just to come in on that, an interesting point from some of the poll trends that we've seen over the last while is that in the past we've always seen, you know, that the smaller party takes the hit in a coalition. They seem to get the blame for things. We saw that with the Greens back in 2007 and with Labour in 2011. But at the moment, the Greens seem to be doing okay. They were up a little bit in that poll at the weekend, but it's Fianna Fáil who are taking the flak. And I think that, again, within the party is just prompting lots of questions as to why they're getting the blame for things and why is Fine Gael seemingly getting the accolades for doing stuff right.
Interesting as well, because I the Tánaiste Sealy of Radcliffe was taking questions today, and he did say at one point that the messaging, you know, is very clear. I think he was getting criticised for having mixed messages, but he said you'll have seen ministers from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael out this week talking about it. And I just noticed that he didn't mention the Green Party ministers at all. Now, it did so happen that they weren't out, but should he not be mentioning Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Green Party together? Or was it a slip of the tongue? I didn't know. I just thought that was an interesting point.
It's interesting too, because when we looked at the beginning of this, you said, where might the early problems lie? And if you're looking at the government formation talks process, well, you think you would have looked to the Greens. But such have the magnitude and the scale of the problems elsewhere that no one really, the Greens haven't posed any. Yes, there was those voting incidents just before the recess, which would have set off alarm bells. But generally, the problems look to be between the two bigger parties. And I still don't know, is there a degree of trust there? Do ministers from different parties, some of them do, you can see quite clearly Pascal Dunne and Michael McGrath have a good working relationship. But do ministers, and what the way this is illustrated, people within government and previous governments would have told me, is that if you go to another minister and you're from a different party, will they give you the full picture? And that has to happen. It's not clear that that's happening between the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael ministers at the moment, that you're getting full disclosure. Now, you're right that the Tánaiste, in a fairly interesting response to Richard O'Donoghue in the chamber this morning, was emphasising unity. Richard O'Donoghue painting a picture of a group of people who got in a bus and drove it up the hill but just stalled at the very top, and that the handbrake is going and they're going 100 miles down the hill at the moment. The Tánaiste are keen to emphasise that there will be more unity, but there's no doubt there were difficulties up to now, and a crisis will bring you together or it'll pull things apart more.
So all in all, I suppose, Sandra, not a great week maybe for Fianna Fáil. Fine Gael, not too bad a week, would you say?
Well, I think the criticisms of the launch on Tuesday of this massive kind of policy position that's going to be with us for the next 6 to 9 months, I'm afraid that's going to have to be shared equally around the government. Certainly, it was confusing on Tuesday. There weren't straight answers as to where exactly Dublin was at the news conference. There wasn't straight answers as to what exactly the extra restrictions were for Dublin. And we know that ministers came out and all slightly contradicted each other as well in relation to Dublin. So I think the parties have to share that. I thought it was a little odd that at the news conference on Tuesday, you didn't have somebody from the Green Party subbing in for Eamon Ryan. Now, we know the reason he wasn't there. He was waiting for a test for a family member. That's all clear, which is good. But perhaps they should have put up another minister to own that and to be part of it. Instead, it was the Taoiseach, the Tánaiste and the health minister. And we've probably seen the Green Party less visible this week, although Eamon Ryan is back in Leinster House today.
So we'll expect Eamon Ryan probably then to be next to the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste, and perhaps Ronan Glynn as well then tomorrow evening for the government. Yeah. Well, we're presuming there'll be a press conference. We haven't had notification
I
yet.
Presume so, yeah. I suppose that the week has been most difficult though for the health minister. And
yes, of course.
The health minister is a curious position anyway, given that he's come from different political parties and he wouldn't have a huge amount of allies within his own party, and therefore even less within the wider government from the Fine Gael side. And then all the while, you have the former health minister who tweets a lot about health issues and speaks a lot about it and speaks a lot about his time in health, both from the same area, both went to the same school.
Yes, and again in the chamber, I don't know if you noticed it earlier, there was a little bit of a joke between the Tánaiste and the minister for now further education when I think somebody might have said, could the minister answer this about pointing at Simon Harris? But of course the Tánaiste said, well, you know, he's not the minister for health anymore. Yeah. And as he was sitting down, he said, but I'm sure he's across it, and kind of laughed.
Yeah.
And there was a, you know,
that's all there, and that makes
it,
Stephen Donnelly's job all the more difficult. Yeah. But he hasn't, it was always going to be a step up, and it was a step up in a pandemic. But you think that logic that was applied, that you put the health spokesperson in straight into the health job, that they will get a running start at it that someone else wouldn't have, so far hasn't been justified.
No, but the logic didn't cross over to other positions either, did it?
Not to all. No, not to housing all. Though, yeah.
No, not to education.
And it's curious, that is actually one of the interesting things. I don't know, is it because housing in the midst of the pandemic that somehow things have changed a little, or has there been a vast improvement at ministerial level in housing? But you'd have to say Dara O'Brien has steadied the ship at that level from a political point of view. Yes, there are huge numbers of people homeless. Yes, those huge structural problems that exist in relation to housing are all still there. I think the next move on that will be an affordability scheme, which is likely to be introduced in the budget. That will be seen as one of the big Fianna Fáil policies that they will be seeking to bring forward in the next few weeks.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there for now. Tomorrow is obviously going to be an interesting day. We'll find out whether or not Dublin goes into lockdown, or not lockdown, but certainly a level 3 of restrictions, which is, I suppose, close to lockdown for some people. But that's it for now. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, leave a review, and you can join us again. From me, Maggie Doyle, Sandra Hurley and Micheál Lehane, thank you for listening to the Your Politics podcast.